Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hi, Kylie Gillies here with another episode of the Morning Show podcast. Coming up, funny man Merrick Watts on his tasty new role, mixing comedy and cuisine. The Wiggles are about to hit the road with a new tour. We'll catch up with Anthony and Simon. Todd McKinney and Beck Hewitt are in with a sneak peek of the new series of Dancing with the Stars All Stars. And should you rent or buy? Finance editor Gemma Acton explains the pros and cons of each. But we start this episode with our exclusive chat with Meghan Markle's drama teacher, Gigi Perreau. She's opened up about her most famous student. Well, before she was the Duchess of Sussex, Meghan Markle had forged an impressive career for herself in Hollywood. But her passion for the arts began at an early age, at school. The young Meghan was a favourite during her high school plays under the guidance of her teacher, Gigi Perreau.
A Hollywood legend in her own right, Gigi was one of the first people to earn a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. And now she couldn't be more proud of her most famous student. Let's say hello, Gigi Perreau. Welcome to the show. Your career started when you were just 2 years old. 85 credits later, why did you decide to start teaching?
Well, it was interesting. My children were grown, and it's an amazing way to give back. I just felt I had an opportunity to teach at my alma mater, Immaculate Heart High School. And as a result, it gave me a wonderful opportunity to, as I said, share, but also I learned a tremendous amount teaching. It's incredible what you learn from young people if you just listen to them and hear what they have to say.
You mentioned the Immaculate Heart High School, where you taught for more than 20 years. This is, of course, where you met Meghan Markle. What was she like as a student?
She was absolutely adorable. I mean, I always said she had a certain sparkle about her, and Sparkle Markle. She really was a standout student, and she isn't the only standout student I had. I had several that were remarkable and have gone on to do wonderful things. But Meghan really did have a special quality. She was very loving. She was very generous with the other actors when she was on stage. And she was not only interested in theater, she was also quite a humanitarian even then. She was very active in the religion department, and she would go down on weekends and feed the homeless and do lovely works at convalescent homes and hospitals. Mm. So it is no surprise to me where Meghan has come throughout all these years. Yes, she was very driven. I would say she wanted to be a star. She wanted to be a success. But there's more to it, I think. And I'm very concerned right now, because I'm just hoping that all of this will turn out to be the right move that she and her husband have done, Prince Harry. I think they're an amazing couple. I respect them tremendously. And again, it was a wonderful experience for me to work with Meghan, because at that point, she was living with her dad. And Tom volunteered. He was a lighting designer for one of the major TV stations in Los Angeles. And when we were doing our shows at Immaculate Heart, our musicals and our dramatic shows, Tom would do the lighting for us. And not only did he do the lighting, but he worked with the students and he taught them and he mentored the students in lighting and sound design. And usually on weekends when we were there for hours and hours and hours, Tom would disappear and come back with a bunch of food for everybody, for the cast and crew.
Wow. So,
I'm sorry he's been put in such a difficult position.
Yeah.
As I said, I have nothing but positive things to say about Meghan and about Tom.
And what about their relationship back then? Because millions of words in the news cycle have been spent on trying to work out what this relationship is and was. How was it for you looking back at this relationship when
she was younger? It was wonderful. I mean, here was a dad who would come to the set or the school after work and help, and Meghan would, you know, be assisting him with things, and then they would go home together. Their relationship was wonderful. He was a very devoted dad. I know he loves Meghan tremendously. What happened afterwards, I have no idea. I would not even pretend to be judgmental about anything that might have happened. Tom was a very gentle person. He was very kind and very, very shy.
Yeah. What about the
behind the camera person? Yeah.
What about her sister Samantha? A lot written about Samantha Markle as well. What was your observation of the big sister?
I never met her. I never saw her. She did not come to any of the shows that I was aware of. She might have. I met Tom's older son several times. He came to school when we were doing the shows. But I never met Samantha.
Okay. Okay.
Don't know her at all.
We're nearly right out of time, but we have to touch on this. You were spotted by Meghan on her wedding day. Talk us through how that played out.
Oh, that was such fun. I was there for ITV, and my daughter and I got a lovely trip to London my first time there. And when the royal carriage came down the pathway, I was right up at the fence, right just about where the camera is now, and Meghan turned, and I was carrying an Immaculate Heart pendant. And I'm sure that must have caught her eye, but she looked, and there was a moment of recognition, which was absolutely lovely. Whether it really, really was true or not, everyone around me said, "Oh, Gigi, she recognized you, she knew you." And I said, "I hope so. I'm here, I love her, and if she saw me, I'm delighted." But it was fun. It was a wonderful experience being there for the wedding. It truly was.
Terrific, Gigi. Well, we appreciate your time. We spent so much time talking about Meghan on this program, and it's nice to go all the way back to where it started. We enjoyed talking to you this morning.
Thank you. And I would love to someday go to Australia. I'd love to work there sometime. I'm ready. Ready, willing,
ready
and
to
able.
Go. Ready to go. All right.
We know where to find you, Gigi. Thank you so much.
Well, it's time to warm up the big red car, let Dorothy the dinosaur loose and dust off Captain Feather Sword's feather sword, because the Wiggles are about to hit the road. I thought that was a good intro.
Dorothy on the loose? That'd be awesome for some taking the We're All Fruit Salad show right around the country. But that's not all they're not going on for 2021. The world's most popular children's entertainment group is celebrating a massive 30 years of song. Half of the Wiggles, Simon and Anthony, join us live. Hi, team.
Hi.
Hello.
Some personal news to get you first. Simon, we haven't seen you since your bubble came into the world.
I know. Ashley's three months now.
What's life as dad to a three-month-old look
what
like?
What day is it?
Yeah.
No, it's been amazing. We've had an incredible time. He's such a good little boy. He sleeps through the night. He does, you know, everything he's supposed to do. We're having a really, really lovely time.
And we were at the footy. We went to the footy to watch the Tigers and Parramatta. Ashley was there. Simon's a Parramatta fan. Yeah. And he was so calm. We were going crazy. But he had his little headphones on.
Yeah,
listening to Wiggle songs, of course. Love having little Asher on the road with you, right? This is great. We saw this photo on Instagram. Where is it? Let's have another look at that. What's life like backstage now? Because Lockie has his twins. Are they on the road as well?
Yeah, look, that was Simon. And look, the twins aren't on the road yet, but that might have been a little bit harder than the one.
Yes,
baby.
One was.
But it's brought something. We're about families. We're about early childhood babies, music, and it's just calms us all down, makes us grounded. You know, Asher was the calmest thing on the road when we were there.
And if we just see that photo back of the two of you together, Anthony and Asher together, did he vomit on you shortly after taking
that photo? That was Simon.
Oh, that's actually Simon. Me. Yeah, okay. But people were saying, you're taking a risk there.
That's shortly the vomit comes after that.
Right. But these guys were just so calm. And you know how long it takes to get your baby gear packed up, and we were on the road. We're driving. We did 10 cities in New Zealand in 12 days, and
wow.
There's Simon, Lauren, and Asher just Never stressed.
No, we stayed pretty good. It was great. It was amazing. We were very thankful that we could do it together.
It was great.
And of course, the other big news, Emma just got engaged.
I know. Yeah.
Emma got engaged. Emma got engaged to Ollie, who's part of the family. So it's, there you go. When life gets more sparkly, absolutely. And I saw Ollie yesterday and he's very happy.
So you're the patriarch of this family. You've been there since day one. Like, what's it like with, is it like you're the dad that you're giving away your kids, and how's this working?
I don't think it's like that, but I think they look at me like the dad that's, you know, maybe lost it a little bit. I really don't think anyone comes to me for advice, but it's great. I just love seeing everybody happy and you know, all about family.
Great.
I always remember this 3-year-old birthday party we did in Bondi once, and there was this dad, I think it was a 3-year-old. Anyway, how old is he now?
Jai, third birthday, he's 27 years old.
See, 27. Wow. Now, I've got to tell you something. This leads to a little bit of advertising, but we're doing our Wiggly Arena tour.
Sorry, are you using my son to launch your advertising?
No, I'm paralleling this story. So, but the 27-year-olds, the 20-year-olds, voted to us, get us in a show on the Triple J called The Like a Version. I'd never heard of it. And we did a song called The Elephant Song.
Yeah.
There's no the in front of Triple J or Elephant, by the way. Just Elephant and Triple J.
Okay, so it was called The Elephant Song. Anyway, we did it. And it's been this big hit. So the parents who are coming like The Elephant Song. So we're going to pay homage to parents by playing this song and the big show tour we're about to do.
Yes.
Here's the thing. We are getting inflatable elephant and a flying elephant for the kids to view. And the great thing about that inflatable elephant that walks around, no one has to clean up behind it. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
Fantastic. So we do the math, 27 and 3, that adds up to 30. So 30th anniversary, but you were with the Wiggles before you even put on the skivvy.
I did a lot of backing vocals for the original guys quite a few years. I used to do a lot of musicals and stuff, but then come in and out and do backing and all sorts of things.
Simon was the rock of the early years. He did the bass voices that I mimed.
Yeah.
Anyway, we went to the studio one day.
He's lost his voice.
Totally. One day we went to the studio. We were about to do this. We're on our way to Wiggle Bay. And I said, "Where's Simon?" They went, "He's gone to Korea to do Cats." And I was devastated because I had to do the low voice.
Now, we've got to talk about We're All Fruit Salad, right? Tickets selling like hot potatoes, of course. Kids are going, adults want to go. Who's going to see the shows? Because we talk about my boy when he was 3 and now he's 27, and I don't think he's having a baby yet, not that we know about. But the parents who are coming to your shows, kids coming to your shows now, right?
Yeah.
Back in the day.
That's
it's
right.
Full song.
That's why we're doing the elephant song. They know all the songs from the early years. I think for a lot of the children, a lot of the parents, it's their first show. Parents, the first show they've brought a child to. And also with this COVID times, this is the first time we've all been able to get out together. We were at the footy the other day and it was just joyous just to be amongst people.
Yeah, were you there as the Wiggles or just you there?
We left the skivvy at home because I get too irate about the Tigers. Simon again. Simon is so calm. That's why his baby's calm. The Parramatta are winning and he didn't stir me at all.
Now, no kiddies. The Wiggles never get irate.
They never
get angry, kiddies. Great to see you guys. Congratulations on everything that's going on.
If you would like to see the Wiggles on the We're All Fruit Salad Tour. That actually doesn't really roll off the tongue, does it? But I'm getting
there. Does it or not? What would you have called
it? We're All Fruit Salad Tour. No, it's a good name.
Kylie would have gone with the inflatable elephant.
We're all fruit salad.
We'll put all the ticket details over on themorningshow.com.au. I'm sure the 4-year-olds can, it just rolls off the tongue, the 4-year-olds. Yeah, yes.
What we're going to do, we're going to email you a list of things we think are better than that.
No. Okay. Always.
Absolutely.
Thanks, guys. So good to see you.
You too.
Well, they say that rent money is dead money, but for many, purchasing a place to call their own is simply out of the question. Last month, property prices increased at their fastest rate in over 30 years, with Sydney and Melbourne house values rising tens of thousands of dollars in just a single month. The median cost for a Harbour City property is now $928,000.
But it's not all bad news, with some financial forecasters saying renters could be better off, and chasing the great Australian dream may not be the best way to get ahead.
The Seven Network finance editor Gemma Acton has more on this. Hey, Gemma. Morning. Australian house prices, particularly Sydney and Melbourne, are some of the most expensive property prices in the world. Can we expect that to remain that way, that trend to continue?
The big problem we have is that very few people want to sell their houses and a lot of people want to buy. People who have houses don't want to sell because they're worried about getting back into the market if they do. People who don't own houses yet really want to get on the housing ladder, particularly as house prices run further and further away from them. Mm. That balance doesn't look to be resolving itself anytime soon. And the other big problem, of course, if we want house prices to stabilise or come down a bit, is that with interest rates so low, we can borrow such big mortgages and keep bidding house prices up higher and higher.
Mm. What about that saying that rent money is dead money? That if you're renting, that's the case. But some experts say frustrated buyers may in fact be better off financially if they do rent. So have we done the figures on that, Gemma?
Well, it really depends on where you are. So since the pandemic began and the borders closed, certain areas, particularly city locations, especially in Sydney, Melbourne and Canberra, were really badly hit because they were very reliant on international tourists, international students, new arrivals into the country. So we saw rents come down quite a lot in inner city areas. On the other hand, if you're in a regional area that suddenly became popular, we've seen rents shoot up over the last year. Mm-hmm. We've seen terrible situations where people are having to offer well above the asking price, having to offer 3 or 6 months rents in advance. So the answer to the question is it really depends on where you want to be, but certainly in some places, particularly in inner city locations, you could be a lot better off renting. At least you'll get a lot more for your money renting than you were buying.
Bang for your buck.
Now, 50% of millennials said they have to look at buying on the urban fringe, meaning more than 45 k's from the CBD, for instance, if they want to get into the market, if they can find something they can afford that way. Is leaving major cities the new norm? Has the pandemic taught us that you don't have to be in the city anymore?
Well, there are a few things going on here. Firstly, affordability is a huge problem, more of a problem in city centres than further out. Affordability is pretty much as bad as it's ever been in Australia. Mm. There's also a lifestyle angle. As you mentioned, more people are considering their lives, thinking, hang on, do I really want to squish myself into a tiny box apartment when I could perhaps get a bit more space and land further outside? Mm. But thirdly, transport's getting better and better. So being 45 kilometres away isn't so punishing now as it was a decade, two decades, 3 decades ago, and transport options are improving the entire time.
Yeah, and now that we're working from home 4 days a week. Mm. What about rent vesting? This is where you rent somewhere where you want to live and invest somewhere where you can actually afford.
Yeah.
So maybe buy on the outskirts, because that's what you can afford, but still live in the city. Is that a viable strategy long term?
I think it's a really sensible idea. Where you need to be for a particular reason, it might be near your kids' school or it might be near your work, is not necessarily where you would want to live long term, or where might be the best investment from a house price growth point of view. So if you can separate those decisions and find somewhere to rent, which suits your purposes, but then also find somewhere that you either want to move into in the future, maybe when your kids have finished school or you're no longer working in your job, or somewhere where you think there's going to be great house price growth, which is not where you live, then separating those decisions can make a lot of sense. Now, two things to be careful of: tax implications, so keep that in mind if it's not your primary residence, and also, I think that,
there's lots of taxes. There's lots of stuff you've got to look at before you make that decision.
There are, so it's a bit more complex than that.
Yeah, so there's lots of pros and lots of cons in that one, right? Pressure is building on the Reserve Bank to hose down this white-hot property market, right? What are we thinking with these interest rates? And this is, everyone wants to know, because everyone's looking to commit or overcommit, as you said. How long can we expect interest rates at this level?
Well, it's not really the Reserve Bank's job to hose down the property market, unfortunately. And APRA, which is the Prudential Regulator, said, look, it's not really our job either, so nobody is really taking...
So it's our job here on the morning show. It's your job, Gemma.
Well, so the problem is everyone has responsibility to make sure the system's stable, but not to watch that house prices don't go crazy. Right. And both the RBA and APRA at the moment are saying, look, the system does seem stable to us. The Reserve Bank has made it very clear they do not intend to raise interest rates until we see wage growth move up pretty quickly, about 3% a year.
Right.
They don't see that happening until at least 2024, so we can expect interest rates to stay at this 0.1% level for a lot longer.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so therefore, the whole supply and demand, low interest rates, we're in this bubble, it would seem, for quite a while of what seems to be almost not being able to afford to buy a home.
Yeah, and I think what we can hopefully expect to see is this rampant growth. As you mentioned, over 30 years we haven't seen this pace. Mm-hmm. That's got to slow down. We just can't maintain that pace. Every time prices go up, more and more people are priced out.
Mm.
So there has to come a point where that growth relents. But in terms of will prices actually stop, turn around and start falling, which would actually help a lot of people, we can't expect to see that anytime soon.
Okay. Thank you, Gemma. Good
Thank
to talk
you.
To you.
All right.
Merrick Watts has always turned it up a notch, whether he's making us laugh on radio or taking it to the limit on SAS Australia, making it through the whole grueling course. It was incredible.
But the funny man also has a very cultured side with a passion of mixing comedy and cuisine. This is taking on a delicious new role.
Let's work out what all this is about, Merrick Watts. Hello, mate.
Hello. Who am I even anymore?
I know. We're looking at this going, what's going on? Now, what you have done, you've made this wonderful sea change with the family. How's beach living?
Yes, I have moved out of the inner west of Sydney to Maroubra, and clearly it's the talk of the town. I've moved to Maroubra, which has got a reputation. You know, the Bra Boys are from Maroubra.
Are they?
Did not know that until after we bought the house. But, you know, you find these things out. But I haven't seen the movie yet. I'm looking forward to it.
Are you loving it?
Yeah, I love it. I love Maroubra. It's a great part of the world and really happy. And the family's really, really enjoying it. So, good little sea change for us.
Good.
So, I'm going to join Nippers.
Yeah.
Learn how to swim.
Miz, what's harder, relocating house and living with your family over Easter or SAS Australia?
Ooh. If I'd taken my family on SAS Australia, that would have been the hardest challenge in the world. Not having them there was actually a bit of a blessing, I'm not going to lie. It was actually easier. Moving house is, without doubt, the hardest thing I've ever done in my life.
Really?
Oh, it's just punishing because I have to do everything. I have to do all of the lifting and all the moving because, you know, like there's
an
expectation now
in the house.
Yeah, Larry, I'm a tight ass. I'm not going to pay other people to do that. I'm just going to get a mate's ute and do 180 trips. That's what I've done.
It was worth it, right?
Yeah, 100% it was.
Now, SAS, the next series is coming up. Mm-hmm. What's your advice for the new recruits? Because you went really hard with that.
Yeah, I went too hard. I reckon I blew a fuse. Honestly, I think a few people argue that I'd blown the fuse before
long
I went on that
ago.
Course. Yeah, absolutely. And that's true too. My advice would just be think very, very carefully how much you want to do that because it's constantly uncomfortable. There's no rest at all. It never, ever ceases. And it's an amazing feel. I'm really looking forward to seeing, there's me getting my head punched in. A lot of people enjoyed that. That rated very highly that night.
Yeah.
Spike in the ratings. A few people requested, can we see Merrick punched more often? I think it's a great television show. I'll be watching the next season really enthusiastically to see how people go and what kind of limits they can push themselves to.
Is it much harder than you expected? Because when you watch it, you think, oh, I could do that. We're all armchair critics.
Do you watch that and think I could do that?
Oh, sure.
I didn't.
No. I remember Tarch saying that, so it doesn't even look hard. Mez has got his hard face on, but it's not even that hard.
No. Was it harder than you expected?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely harder. It's the tasks that you see, which are fantastic, they're really difficult, but it's what it is, it's just the constant cold, the constant endurance of having to do stuff. You don't get a lot of food, you know, you have to kind of get by on meagre rations and you've really got to focus on just surviving. I mean, that's why, you know, look, there's a lot of people going, I thought that guy was a comedian. And I go, so did I. That's exactly what I thought as well. But once you get on there, if you don't sharpen up pretty quickly, you will get very severely punished.
It was tremendous to watch you do that stuff.
Thanks, mate.
Now, some people might not know this. Everyone knows you're a comedian, but a lot of people wouldn't know that you have this passion for wine.
I know, because most people, understandably, think I'm a massive bogan. But I'm a well-dressed bogan
today.
You're
a well-dressed bogan. You've got the kerchief going on.
Yeah.
Tell us about Grapes of Mirth.
Okay, Grapes of Mirth is a great company that I started with a friend of mine in Adelaide where we do large-scale comedy events and wineries right around the country. And started in McLaren Vale a few years ago, and it's just grown and grown and grown. And my passion around wine has been there for 20 years. I love wine. This year, I've just been fortunately been made an ambassador for 2021 year South Australian wine.
Oh,
so
right.
Yeah, being an ambassador for wine, winning. Live the dream, people. Live the dream. Never give up on your dreams. 20 years ago, when I was a young man, I said one day I'm going to be an ambassador for this, and everyone said you're insane.
Wine.
I said I'll show you just how crazy I really am.
But it's also good to go and support local regions because
absolutely.
We can't fly overseas at the moment.
Correct.
And it's great to go and support local businesses.
And I think it's a good opportunity for people to be reminded of how great the regional elements of Australia are, particularly those wine regions. In South Australia, like Barossa is stunning, McLaren Vale is stunning.
Oh,
you've got lots to go and see and do, but you know, food and wine in Australia has just gone to European standards over the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a great time for people to get out and have a look at it.
Hey, tell us about American Express Delicious Month Out.
Okay, so I work for Delicious Magazine with my friend Mike Benning. We write about and talk about wine a lot. Back to wine. Living the dream! And one of the things that goes great with wine is food, and Delicious and American Express in the month of May are asking people to get out because of, you know, the restrictions that we've had over the last 12 months with people not being able to go out and enjoy food and wine.
Yep.
And as a result, the hospo industry has been decimated, and they're starting to get back on their feet. And this is, a fantastic incentive to get people to go out and get amongst it and go to anything, local Italian to some high-end restaurant, wherever it is. Spend your money, enjoy your time out, and get back to some normality.
Yeah. Good stuff.
And sometimes it's good to pick a good wine for a good date. What are your top tips, Liz?
Ooh, see, this is one I was thinking about before. Sometimes when you go out and you're eating rich food, Tash, you want to have a good balance, right?
And passion pop?
Yeah, well, funnily enough, you're looking for a balance of elements. And I'd say if you're eating something rich, what you want to do is look at it like Larry's jeans in the 1980s, right? You want something with high acid content. Short on length, but a really tight finish. That's the Larry Ember of wine purchasing if you're going to a restaurant.
So just remember that.
Just say, I'll have one Larry Ember to go, please.
Can you say to the waiter?
A short glass of wine then.
Can you just say to the waiter, I want something that reminds me of Larry Ember's pants.
Yeah,
is that what you say?
Yeah, I say that.
We need to finish our meal.
Yeah, I say that to them and they say, it's probably time you go now. And I go, okay, fair enough.
Good stuff, mate. You got a lot on. Good to see you.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me in.
All right.
All the best.
Thank you very
much.
All the
best to you too.
All the best, I don't know.
What about Mungie Wines? I'm from Mungie. What about Mungie Wines? They're great.
Yeah, I mean, probably should have left it there. No, they're great too.
And for more information about the American Express, delicious month out, you can head over to our website.
I was saying to Tash, essentially this is why we follow the script, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah,
good to see you, mate. Anyway, we're done now.
It's been great.
Take care.
Enjoyed it.
All the best.
It's been great.
Wish you all the best.
Yeah, like to you both. Good on you. Thank you. It's been great. Yeah, thank you.
We pray for you. Thank you.
It's been great to be here.
Good to see you.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Well, we're never surprised to hear just how hard Chloe Maxwell is working, especially when she's raising awareness for people on the autism spectrum, a job she happily took on when she began her own journey as a parent.
If there's anyone who should be proud of her, it's this guy, our mate Max, son of Chloe and hubby Matt Rogers. Max is leading by example in his own way.
Max Rogers and his mum, Chloe Maxwell, join us now. Hi, guys. Chloe, first off, we need to check in. You're on the Gold Coast. The region did a great job in controlling the recent COVID spike recently.
Yes, we're here. We've got masks. Maxie's got his mask. It says, not today, Rona. We're taking every precaution.
Yeah, I think you're masking up indoors until the 15th of April in Queensland, right?
We are, yes.
Yeah, you're doing very well. Indeed. Chloe, last week was World Autism Day. Each year we speak to you about why it's important. Are you seeing improvements in the awareness?
Oh, definitely. I think it's fantastic. Anyone that gets behind any sort of awareness with autism, the more it's out there, the more people can understand, and the more understanding, that the less we have to worry about our autistic young people. And it's definitely something I'm passionate about, and very passionate about showing off our Maxie. We let him hang out with his autism hanging out all the time. I think it's great. We encourage it.
We are the kid of the universe.
What do you reckon about that description, Max? We let him hang out with his autism.
Autism out? Let your autism hang out? You do that every day,
I do.
And you do it very well. Chloe, you spoke at an autism awareness event earlier in the month. I mean, you described it as a resource you wish you had access to when you started your journey. Are we doing everything we can to ensure new parents are educated enough?
Oh, look, I think there's so much more that can be done, but certainly, it was, 12 years ago now when Max was diagnosed, and we've certainly come a long way with autism awareness, and I believe there's a lot more resources available for families that are going through a diagnosis now. And I wish that I'd had a lot of those resources back then, but I'm certainly very happy with where Max is now.
One of the great things for Max over the years has been getting into the garden, and we know that you've got a thriving garden, Max, at home. We always love watching your YouTube videos. How's the avocado tree particularly going?
Good, thanks.
This is one avocado tree, isn't it? You've got two.
Yes.
Is this How big's the other one?
The other one is about 5 years old and could be almost above my height.
He's about 6'2", so he's got one that's that big, and this is his little baby one. It's only a year old, and he actually, these both came from avocados that he ate
I love it. I love it. And great that Max is contributing to the family budget, because those avocados are expensive.
They are expensive.
Glad to see you pitching in there, Max. Hey, Max. You've been just as... Oh, sorry to keep you up, Max. You've been as busy as your mum, because we hear that you're now a school leader. Tell us
you
about that.
You want to talk about that?
I missed almost a few meetings.
Oh, you've missed a few meetings.
Yes.
But what are you a leader of?
Inclusion.
He's an inclusion leader at his school.
If people just like me are inclusion leaders.
Yeah, so he has he's the voice for all the special needs kids in his school. They actually do a fabulous job here at Miami State High School, and yeah, he's in the leadership team for middle school there, which is fabulous.
It was so amazing to see that vision of you walking up on stage and getting appointed as a leader. We're all so proud of you, Max, and not just that at school. The jiu-jitsu's going well as well. White belt, black stripe. Tell us about that. That sounds pretty cool.
It was hard.
It was hard. Well, you reckon you could take Daddy down now, though? You're getting pretty good.
Yes.
Yeah, well, you know what? Things that are worth getting in life can be hard sometimes, Max, and you're doing an awesome, awesome job. Chloe, so wonderful to chat with you. Is there anything more that you would like to add as we say goodbye? Because you are doing such an awesome job in this space.
Yeah, obviously our charity 4ASD Kids is still helping children with resources and putting them into programs across Australia. And currently we have Joe Ingles, who's an NBA superstar, plays for the Utah Jazz, doing a silent auction every day this month in aid of Autism Awareness Month, which is fabulous. You can get behind that. The GC50 running festival's coming up here on the Gold Coast. We're a beneficiary of that. And I believe Matt's having another golf day in August. So... you'll have to stay tuned for that one, but obviously you can catch me if you're on the Gold Coast on Good Taste Brekkie on Juice 107.3 most mornings.
Oh,
every morning, actually.
There you go.
We will tune in. Chloe, Max, you're a shining light. Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you. Thanks, Sherbo. Thanks, Kylie. Thank you.
Well, in a year without live music, it was a concert to remember. Held during the height of lockdown in April 2020, the virtual One World Together at Home concert featured stars from Lady Gaga to Elton John and Stevie Wonder, raising more than $160 million for frontline workers.
And it was all thanks to this man, Australian Hugh Evans, and his organisation Global Citizen. So how does a small group out of Melbourne turn into an international campaign to end poverty? Even more, how did he get everyone from Beyonce to Hugh Jackman, even Oprah, involved? Hugh Evans joins us live now from LA. Welcome to the show. Good to talk to you. For years now, Global Citizen has been holding these, you know, huge outdoor fundraising events to help those in need. 2020 obviously changed all of that, but you quickly evolved, you pivoted. Tell us the story about One World Together at Home concert and how it was created.
Well, thank you, Larry, and thank you, Kylie, for having me on your show this morning. It's great to be with you. So right after the lockdown was declared, we received a phone call from the head of the World Health Organization, Dr. Tedros, and he asked Global Citizen if we could mobilize our members to take action to provide personal protective equipment for frontline community health workers. And immediately, Chris Martin of Coldplay decided the next day that he was going to host a virtual concert in his living room that became One World Together at Home. And a few weeks later, Lady Gaga, an amazing advocate of Global Citizen, and other incredible artists like Delta Goodrum joined in, and it became the largest ever virtual concert, and most importantly, raised $127 million for frontline community health workers.
Yeah. Which is just awesome, Hugh. Do you literally just pick up a phone? I hear, you know, so Chris Martin gets the ball rolling maybe, but are you able to just pick up the phone and go, you know, hey, Gaga, want to join my concert?
Well, if only it was that easy. Really what happened was Lady Gaga called a few weeks after the momentum was really building, and her amazing manager, Bobby, and they said, you know, Lady Gaga wants to play a curatorial role and help bring everyone together. So she called artists like Elton John, and she called the Rolling Stones, who agreed to be part of it, Sir Paul McCartney, Delta Goodrum, Hugh Jackman. It was amazing to see the momentum. And then ultimately 300 million people tuned in around the world. And I'm pleased to tell you today that 100% of the money raised has gone to support frontline community health workers all around the world.
Oh, Hugh, it's an awesome idea, awesome result. You're talking to the best in the biz, right? And we know that on any given day, there'd be a couple of divas here and there. What's happening behind the scenes of something like this? Or does everybody at this point drop all the diva behaviour and go, yeah, I'm in, we're going to change the world with this one?
Well, I actually find that people are genuinely committed to change the world. And I think the reason why is because I think there's two key ingredients. I think firstly, at Global Citizen, we have the most amazing team working behind the scenes. You know, our team of Global Citizen staff and volunteers are the best in the world. They work around the clock, and I'm indebted to them, and I'm proud to be part of the Global Citizen team because they are amazing. But most importantly, we have a mission. And our mission is to see an end to extreme poverty by 2030, and we're not going to rest until we've achieved that goal. And I think those are that's the reason why people are willing to put their egos behind them and really focus on the cause at hand.
And how do the funds get distributed, Hugh?
So when a Global Citizen takes action through the app or through the website, they call on world leaders to make commitments. So you may have seen through One World Together at Home, leaders like Tim Cook of Apple made a $10 million commitment to support frontline community health workers. But a few weeks later, when we worked with Hugh Jackman and President von der Leyen of the EU, we managed to get $1.5 billion pledged. And all of that money goes directly to the UN agencies. So the money doesn't come through Global Citizen. We hold the world leaders' feet to the fire to make sure they fulfill their pledges, whether that is to the Global Fund or to Gavi, the Vaccine Alliance. We make sure the money goes directly to the cause and where it's needed most, so that there isn't any money spent on administration. We want to make sure it gets straight to the people.
Yeah, and you let those global leaders know too, Hugh, by the way, if they do mess up, they'll be called out on the morning show in Australia as well. 100%.
We need that.
Hey, you've called on Hugh Jackman, Billie Eilish, Coldplay and many more to help launch the recovery plan for the world. You touched on it earlier. Tell us all about it, because like all of your other projects, this sounds absolutely incredible.
Yeah, so recently, together with Hugh Jackman and Billie Eilish and many of our supporters, most importantly with the World Health Organization, we announced the recovery plan for the world. It's a 5-point plan designed to mobilize citizens to take simple actions to achieve the policies that will help the world recover better together. The first one is obviously ending COVID-19 for all. Secondly, averting the hunger crisis globally. Thirdly, getting every child back into school. Fourth, making sure that we combat climate change. And finally, making sure this is an opportunity to advance equity for everyone on the planet. These are the 5 points that we're advancing over the next 12 months. We're going to have many opportunities, including actually, we've got a huge announcement next week about our campaign called Vax Live, which is focused on uniting the whole world for the final push to get a vaccine to every single person on this planet.
Okay, it sounds amazing. We'll be sure to keep an eye out for that one. Hugh, terrific work you're doing. You must be able to sleep well at night. Hugh Evans, great to catch up with you.
Thank you for your time. Thank you, Kylie. Thank you, Larry.
Oh, great stuff. Thank you, mate. Lovely to chat.
Okay, picture it. The year is 2004 and the Seven Network has taken a chance on a brand new show called Dancing with the Stars. The idea was simple. Teach a bunch of celebrities the art of ballroom dancing, with the best of the best taking home the Mirror Ball Trophy.
Well, who'd have thought that 17 years later it would still be one of the most talked about shows in the country? And this weekend, this Sunday, is no exception, with a brand new format premiering. It's called Dancing with the Stars All Stars. Season 1 winner Beck Hewitt joins us from Melbourne. Todd McKinney is here with us in the studio. Hello, welcome. We've got a lot to get through.
Hey,
start,
hey,
good morning. Hi. Let's start with you, Todd. Mm-hmm. I know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask it anyway. How much convincing did it take for you to come back and be a judge?
I actually rang the network and asked to say, do it again. I was a bit quiet during COVID. Girls got to eat, as they say.
You were there with your maracas, weren't you?
I was there, like, instantly. Yeah. And as soon as I knew, everybody was coming back, all of the other judges, Daryl, Sonia, and the whole retro kind of thing, I jumped at it. Yeah, it wouldn't have been the same to say no to it. So, and we had a ball. It was a bit like Weekend at Bernie's, working with Helen again, but it was fun.
Don't say retro too much, because I was on the first season. Beck, you and I danced together way back in 2000, not exactly together, but on the same ballroom floor. You won, and I came a very, very good fourth runner-up.
You were incredible.
Can I just ask? Well, let's stay on that.
Pauline Hanson.
Before we get
Pauline
into your
Hanson
dancing.
Pauline Hanson beat you.
She may have. What do you remember about me out there on the ballroom floor?
Because it's all about you.
Oh, goodness. I mean, You picked up choreography really well.
Oh, Robert, see?
Yes. Did you have a nice figure of eight action with your rumba hips?
No, I had a good circle action.
And not enough to appear in the All-Stars.
Exactly. Where was my call?
Becky must get asked to do a lot of tail. There you are, Shervo. You haven't changed a bit. Look at that.
You look good in blue.
Jeez, I love those tails. Hey, Beck, you must get asked to do a lot of TV shows. What made you say yes to this one?
I just remember having an absolute blast when I did it back in 2004. So, and I love dancing, so I was so thrilled to be asked and had an absolute blast. It was such an amazing cast as well. It was like a big reunion with all my friends.
She's underselling it too. Mm. Beck was extraordinary.
She is extraordinary.
She hasn't lost anything. I think you've actually gained maturity. We saw a different side of you, Beck, this time, which was a real surprise.
An oily Beck?
She had an oily unctuousness to her. There's one for Scrabble players.
That's a term, right?
Yes, yes.
Take us through that, because some of the All-Stars hadn't danced for a long, 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 long time.
No.
Did they take a bit of time to get into it?
Well, not from what we saw. I think they had a few weeks of rehearsal before we started to get to, you know, oil up the joints. And like Tom, for instance, Tom Williams, he hadn't done it for a few years. And he, of course, had that really iconic take your shirt off moment. So there was a lot of pressure on Tom to see whether he would recreate that moment.
Mm. The dance that stopped the nation, they called it.
It was the dance that stopped the nation. It really was. But interestingly, we see a really interesting side to Tom, and I think he kind of reveals that was a little bit tough on him, having that pressure, and it's more than just a dance thing for him.
Beck, mum of three now, the kids are all grown up, mostly. They've been coming to cheer you on. Your daughter, Mia, actually sung for the audience during a break in filming.
Yes, Mia is absolutely glued to her guitar and ukulele. She writes songs all the time. It's just like a little outlet for her. She's a creative soul and just loves doing that. So it was a nice safe space for her to perform.
She normally
performs in her bedroom.
I hear Cruz is very good with a tennis racket as well, and those cameras are always rolling. We also found another one of your little kids is very talented, your daughter Ava as well.
I tell you what, the apple does not fall far from the tree, Beck Hewitt.
She is a mini-me, everybody says. We look a little bit alike. But yeah, she just loves to dance, so she was super excited I was doing a dancing show.
Todd, we heard you mentioned the judges there before, but also Sonia Kruger is back. Sonia's and I know back. You two love working together.
We do love working together. I think she'd served me with a nice little Sonia Kruger backhand within the first 2 minutes of the show.
Something like you haven't changed a bit in 17 years?
No, it was more about how you have changed. But she didn't warn me, the bugger. Anyway, I'm like, don't drag me into your opening remarks, leave me. But it was great because her and I have such a friendly banter, and she's like my naughty little sister, and it just felt like that again. So much of it in 10 minutes just felt like we had never left.
Well, you've been your lifelong friends with Sonia.
Lifelong friends, Beck. We were
5 former winners in the cast, including yourself. I mean, that just speaks to, I guess, the calibre of talent in this country. What was it like? I mean, at the best of times, being in Dancing with the Stars is difficult, let alone having all those winners.
Yeah, the standard in this series is really high. Everyone can actually learn the choreography. That wasn't a problem. But everyone is really doing a great job at performing their dances. I mean, also the production value is so much higher. It's a really, really great show, but definitely everyone's very competitive in this season. You know, you don't know who's going to take home the mirror ball.
Yeah, but competitiveness is something you no doubt are used to in the Hewitt household. You're all singing, all dancing, and Leighton, of course. That would be something that maybe you could get your head around, okay, or not?
It's funny, I'm not competitive by nature. I just want everyone to have a good time. But yes, you just want to keep getting through so that you can do more dances, because if you get sent home, that's it.
So you want
it to last as long as you can.
When I was watching Beck dance, I kept wondering whether this is the beginning of the reboot of Beck on television, because you look so comfortable out there doing it. Are we going to see her on Home and Away
Let's ask Beck.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, who knows? I mean, I'd love to see what's out there for me. It's funny because taking such a break for such a long time, you do feel a little bit nervous. I remember the first episode, I was in my safe space when I would practice at the studio here in Melbourne, and when I stepped onto the dance floor and there were cameras, I didn't expect to feel a little bit nervous, I guess, about going out and performing in front of people. I think it's something you get more comfortable with, and I go, yeah, I do miss it. It was really good fun, and I'm so honoured to have been a part of it.
Well, Beck, we cannot wait to watch you back on the ballroom dance floor and whatever else you do go on to next. Thank you so much for joining us. And Todd,
thank you.
Be nice.
Well, if they do Dancing with the Stars, the old stars, you guys could throw your hats in the ring.
The old stars.
Shut up,
what about that? Seriously. Where do you get some? Where do you get some of that stuff again?
B team, C team.
Give you
Dancing
number.
With the Stars, All Stars premieres this Sunday, maybe with Todd, maybe without. If we get cut out. I'm running into the edit suite now to cut you out. This Sunday night, 7 o'clock. This Sunday, 7 o'clock right here on 7. Yeah.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Well, they are the secret assaults with very public repercussions. Just last week, Australians were shocked when a major cyber attack infiltrated federal parliament and crippled a TV network. But these were far from isolated incidents, with other recent high-profile targets, including the West Australian election and one of Victoria's largest hospital operators.
In fact, cyber attacks cost Australian businesses more than $140 million a year. Last year alone, there were more than 60,000 such attacks. That's one every 10 minutes. So how seriously should we be taking the risk? And is there more we can do to keep our digital space safe? Let's get some more. We're joined now by Assistant Minister for Defence, Andrew Hastie, who has responsibility for cybersecurity under the defence portfolio. Andrew, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us. Take us through these cyber attacks. Is this the new normal for us, do you think?
It is the new normal, Larry, and good morning to you, Kylie. Australians have witnessed massive change in the last 18 months. Firstly, we've migrated much of our lives together online because of the pandemic. So everything from work to our social lives, to the delivery of essential services, whether it be banking, shopping, or whatever else we need, is now online. And so we're presenting a much bigger target as a country to cyber criminals. The second big shift is in the Indo-Pacific region. There's a massive strategic realignment going on. We're seeing increased geopolitical competition between nation states, technological disruption, and what we call coercive statecraft, which is being conducted by countries in the pursuit of their national interest. And that includes things like espionage, foreign interference, and cyber attacks. And cyber attacks are popular because they're low cost, they're difficult to attribute to anyone, and you can do them anytime from any place. So we're a much bigger target as a country, and we're seeing a lot more malicious activity online in the cyber realm.
And we're seeing more and more of these attacks on businesses, media, even parliament. Are they all linked?
Well, we can't establish a direct link, but there's a general trend, and we need to start thinking about cyber as a battlefield. It can't be just thinking about our own security in private terms. We've also got to start thinking about our digital sovereignty as a country. So whilst Australians at home need to protect themselves, businesses need to protect themselves, we also need to think about how we do it together as a country, because as I said, we're a much bigger target now that we are living our lives online, more or less.
Yeah. So if these hackers were able to invade our systems on this sort of national scale, what would happen? What would that look like?
Well, they could attack critical infrastructure and they could cause huge disruption to our lives. For example, if they were to target the health sector or an airport or a power grid. In fact, in the Ukraine in late 2015, it's alleged that the Russian government hacked a Ukrainian power grid and shut the power off right in the height of winter. So we know what can be done to harm a country, and that's why the Australian government is acting to protect ourselves with new legislation, the critical infrastructure legislation, to make sure that our critical infrastructure, from data management to the financial sector to groceries to water assets, is all protected, and there's a heightened level of security around those key assets.
So while some of these attacks are reported, Andrew, in the media, and I guess that's because they're very visible, they have no choice but to be reported, how many more are we not seeing that maybe you're actually preventing?
Well, Larry mentioned at the start that there were 60,000 reported to the Australian Cybersecurity Centre last year. That's one every 10 minutes. But businesses alone, it's estimated, lost $143 million last year from just 4,245 attacks. So that's an average of $33,000 per attack that it costs Australian businesses. We don't know the full extent of this, but there are some things that we can do, and they're quite simple. And today I want to encourage your viewers to take action themselves.
Okay. And we'll get to that in a sec. But to talk us through, who exactly are these people? Can it be just one person sitting in front of a computer somewhere, or is it this slick, sophisticated, organised agency sort of concept?
That's a really good question, Larry. There's a full spectrum from small-scale individual hackers to very sophisticated online criminal syndicates who steal your data or your personal information and then on-sell it on the dark web, right through to very sophisticated state actors. And the Prime Minister last year mentioned that there is a state actor out there who is persistently targeting Australian businesses, our government. And so, yes, there are a number of threats from very small individuals right through to large-scale operations.
Okay, so clearly this isn't just something for IT managers to sort out. Some crucial things people at home can do to protect their information. You alluded to it, so what are some tips for us, Andrew?
Well, number one, make sure you keep uploading all the security updates, or patches as we call them, on your phone, your tablet, or your computer at home. So patch your security software often and regularly, and look out for the updates, particularly on your apps, because that's a backdoor that hackers can get through. Number two, make your password complex. Use a passphrase, rather. Simple passwords like password 1234 won't suffice in this era. They have to be sophisticated passwords, so I encourage your viewers to make them more complex. And number three, use multi-factor authentication. What is multi-factor authentication, or MFA? It means that before you can log in onto your email or your bank account, you need to present two bits of evidence. So for example, you might get sent a code by text by your bank before you're allowed to log in to your bank account. Do business with people who use MFA or multi-factor authentication. So they're three quick things that you can do to protect yourself at home.
Okay, Andrew Hassey, all very good advice. Thank you so much for the tips this morning.
Thanks, Kylie. Thanks, Larry. Pleasure.
Thanks for joining us.
Well, the aftermath of COVID-19 hasn't been kind to many people, but women have been hit particularly hard. Females from all walks of life have faced income loss, financial difficulty, and as of January this year, more than 434,000 Australian women were unemployed.
But help is at hand. Dress for Success is a not-for-profit, volunteer-run organisation assisting women to get back on their feet, regaining economic independence, confidence, and providing a much-needed support network.
It's great stuff, isn't it? To tell us more, we welcome CEO of Dress for Success Sydney, Lisa Sadler, and one of their clients, Amelia Drew. Welcome, ladies.
Morning.
Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Lisa, the global pandemic has really increased the demand for a service like Dress for Success. Tell us about
it. Yeah, absolutely. We're finding more than ever the need for our services are in demand. Unfortunately, women have started off from behind the eight ball, so to speak, before the pandemic hit, and now with this increased level of financial distress, it really has hit home. We provide women a suite of programs that we offer, a whole toolkit of practical tools to help them get back into the workforce and really regain their financial independence that they're looking for.
Now, Amelia, what was your situation before you made your way to Dress for Success in Sydney?
I was very lost. I had gotten out of a very long-term abusive relationship with post-traumatic stress disorder. I hadn't worked for 13 years. I was in an ABO situation where I had my three small children full-time. And so I did the hard yards, I went to the smart and skill courses, but then I still couldn't get anyone to look at my resume, interview me, anything. And it took me a little while before I found Dress for Success. And they turned my resume around, they turned my interview skills around. I had a lot of private lessons on how to speak corporate speak, how to get my LinkedIn profile polished, how to get my picture, my profile, everything. So they do more than just make you look good, dressed-wise, and speak eloquently. Mm. They transformed my life once I found them.
And you're a living success story, isn't she, Lisa? Amelia's situation isn't unique. So how is it that you actually help women and the services that you provide?
Yeah, as Amelia touched on, there's a range of programs that we offer. We're known for our dressing and styling, which is absolutely there, but the career support programs are really important, and the one-on-one coaching we really find actually makes the difference. Last year, actually, 80% of our clients who came through the whole program did take that next step on their career journey. So whether it was a full-time job or re-entering some education training or some relevant volunteer work.
And the name Dress for Success, we're looking at it there. You actually give, because many of these women don't have clothes to go to an interview in.
That's right.
So you give them
give them a suitable work attire, and then also once they're successful, they can come back and get a whole week's worth of clothing to help them, you know, on their way.
So give them that confidence,
exactly. Yeah. And we do this in a safe environment. Our changing rooms, as we say, change lives, and we've got a whole suite of stylists to really help to build women's confidence.
Talk about changing lives. Amelia, tell us your situation now.
So before, it was very difficult financially, but now it's not. I have a good job. I'm a data technical business analyst at a good insurance company, and I'm learning a lot, and I have a secure job where I can help my children. So the help that they give is generational. I can help my mom now, I can help my three children, I can help myself. I can be independent so that I don't go into any other negative situations. So I can stand on my own two feet. So it's very powerful.
It's a world of care, isn't it?
It really is.
It's terrific. How can people help an organisation like yours, Lisa?
Yeah, well, we have lots of ways that you can help. We don't receive any government funding, and all of the services we provide for free to our women. And so fundraising is important for us. We actually have an Empower Hour campaign that we're running at the moment. We also have a Power Peace auction that actually closes tonight, so anyone who wants to put a bid on something. And we have a number of pop-up fashion sales as well that you can find on our website.
Well, we love what you do and we think it's an amazing service. So we have a surprise for you.
Oh.
We would really like to help. I'm a fashion ambassador for Harris Scarf, the department store.
Fantastic.
When I told them about the work that you do and the difference you make in women's lives, Harris Scarf wanted to help out as well.
Oh, wow, thank you.
So they are going to give Dress for Success $5,000 worth of gift cards to go and spend so that these women can be helped and can go and shop online.
Oh, at Kylie, that's so generous.
Thank you. This is one of their dresses today.
And you look gorgeous.
And this is like $69. So here is the sort of thing that the clothes that will be able to be made available.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much. That's a complete surprise. Thank you.
Yeah, it is a surprise. You didn't know that. We're keeping it off our sleeves.
Thank you.
So we think that will figure about, if an average outfit you can get for about $60. And we figure that will help about 83 women.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. Thank you so much.
To go in front up to a job interview and be helped in the way that Amelia, we love your story, Amelia.
Thank you.
It's terrific stuff. Good on you.
Thank you.
Great stuff.
Continue good work.
Thanks a lot.
So for more information about Dress for Success and the amazing work that they do, you can head across to our website.
Well, for most people, the idea of public speaking is absolutely terrifying, often ranked as one of the biggest fears in life. And for some, cop this, it's even scarier than death. But words delivered by a powerful orator in a confident and inspired... can change lives.
Professional
orator.
Speaker.
Workplaces and even nations. Gee, I've died a few times on this show, Tash. And while most of those in power do it right, some get it oh so wrong, some of those orators.
You think Peanut's got problems. Anyway, so what are the do's and don'ts of public speaking and just who said it best? For more on this, we're joined this morning by body language and voice expert, Dr. Louise Mahler. Louise, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Good morning.
Let's start with the basics. Can you help Larry? No, I'm kidding.
Beyond help, as it turns out, Louise. Beyond help.
Public speaking, is it about how you say it or is it more about what you're saying?
Oh, it's about how you say it. Absolutely. Every time. You know, when we're here, it's not me versus you. What it is engagement. And that engagement comes from the body. It comes from the vocal tone. Yeah, and over and over and over, research shows that these are the critical things that you need.
Now, let's talk about Prime Minister Scott Morrison for a moment. He's been under fire lately in regards to his handling of some issues, especially in regards to women. What is he getting right? And, Louise, what's he getting wrong?
Well, You know, I think we're witnessing the death of the baby boomer male, really. And there are a few mannerisms here that are driving me insane. The first one is that he often has his head tilted back. Now, this can be for many reasons. It can be just habit. It can be because of neck injury. But it will always be interpreted as arrogance. And this is something people don't like. And then when you add to that, actually, the mouth comes down. This says, again, it could be just habit. But it says, my conversation is final. It's not debatable. And thirdly, there's a weird rhetoric. So when he spoke about getting results for Australian women, I think, wow, that's really weird, old-fashioned rhetoric. Then he talks about will require. Well, will it? You know, that's a bit dogmatic. And then he says it will require listening, collaboration, and working together. Well, I think collaboration and working together are the same thing. But anyway, he's following the rule of three. But what then doesn't work for me is at the end of phrases when he's reading, he actually looks down. So he'll say, and working together, and looks down. And again, that's not connecting with your audience. These are mannerisms of disconnection.
So, Louise, sticking with the Prime Minister for a moment, we've seen him get quite emotional lately. Mr. Morrison even mentioning his family during public speeches. Let's take a listen.
I owe them everything. And to them, I say to you girls, I will not let you down.
You could see he was getting quite upset there. Do you think his emotion comes across as sincere and genuine?
Yes, look, I think it was sincere for his family. And, you know, I get the impression, cynic me, but I get the impression one of the miners has said, you know, emotion, very popular at the moment, go it. And so he can get very emotional about his family, and that's sincere. What happened after that was he started to speak then about women, and the emotion dropped. So the real emotion is for the family, but when you combine the lack of emotion for women and then make statements about a prime minister for women, I think this is showing a disconnection and a lack of understanding for women in general, separate from the family.
Okay, now in contrast, let's move on to someone you think is getting it right. Which political leader currently masters public speaking, do you reckon?
Oh, Jacinda Ardern. You know, worldwide, everyone's saying, there's your example.
Yeah, she's fabulous, isn't she?
What do you think makes her so great?
Well, she has a structure. I've watched her a lot. And whether she's at a lectern and speaking, she has a strong structure. But when she's lying on her bed doing something with her iPhone, something for Facebook, she has a similar structure. She's very structured. But then she changes her style depending on the different forums. So she can be very upright. She can be very relaxed and a lot of gesturing and, oh, you know, different emotions. And the voice moving. But what she does that's so fantastic that's coming back in that we're not seeing with our Australian politicians is she's actually smiling. And when she smiles, she does what's called an American smile. She opens her mouth often so that you could fit two fingers between the mouth. Hi. She'll do this, and people love it. It has messages of I'm open, I'm caring. There is no blockage to my communication.
Okay, let's move on to the US now. President Joe Biden, he's getting sort of mixed reviews for his speeches. What is his body language telling us?
Well, Larry, speaking is a tough game and it requires the energy of the youth and the wisdom of the older man. And unfortunately, Biden has lost his energy of youth. You know, is there anything more pathetic than seeing him running on stage? I think, oh, please don't do that. He's just got that little bit too old. And I think what you're finding is he can manage the everyday. But when it comes to speaking, he's going blank. He's losing his train of thought. Now, having said that, on the weekend, he actually had a briefing where he was addressed by the media and he just stopped speaking and walked out, and people said that he went blank. I listened to that, and the question from the media was very confused. And I think that actually he just made a choice to leave the stage. You know, he was using that wisdom. So it's hard to see, but he is old.
Louise, we've spoken about a lot of politicians who have a public platform. What are some of the tips you can give people, even something as a public speech that they may be making or a school assembly speech?
Yeah, well, I'd love to give some tips about body. And, you know, keep your mouth open and relaxed. Actually, relax your head, because this shows defensiveness when we jam it. And keep the eyes steady, but they're softened by blinking. And I say to people, those three, nod, blink, smile like an idiot. Nod, blink, smile like an idiot. That will save your life. And keep it conversational. You know, the old rhetoric of the planet, what does that mean to us, is gone. We need to be a lot more conversational. And lastly, they say, how do you get over nerves? And the answer is, you don't. You learn how to deal with it. And how you learn to deal with it is actually moving the energy from the upper body to the lower body. The muscles of the lower body can take that strain. The upper body needs to be free. And as I said, nod, blink, smile like an idiot.
And two fingers in your mouth. Louise, lovely to talk to you as always. Bye now. Great to chat to you.
Thanks for listening to The Morning Show podcast. Be sure to subscribe for more episodes and bonus bits. And as always, head to themorningshow.com.au for more info on any of these stories. And we'll catch you again weekdays on 7, straight after sunrise. Bye for now.